Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are going to be talking about racism in America and what's next on the agenda for the left. We see uprisings not just in the United States after the George Floyd killing, but we see the left rising up in many different countries, including now Israel. And it is so matched with what is going on in America, although in Israel it's on a much lower scale. But you know, in America, they could not get Trump out through the voting, not through elections. They couldn't remove him. They couldn't remove him through trials of impeachment. They couldn't remove him through accusations. And so now they're using anarchy in the streets. They're burning buildings down, especially federal buildings, which I think that you all need to be very, very careful and leery about, because if he wins the elections in November, I believe that these anarchists are going to burn the country down, especially the federal places, and we could see states seceding from the union, saying, not my president. And so with these demonstrations, because they can't respect and honor democracy, where people can change their leaders every 4 years, they're trying to force them out. And the same thing here in Israel, by the way, with Netanyahu. We've had three elections in the past year or so, and now we might be heading to a fourth, but that's for another show. But they're in the streets now, the left, trying to force Netanyahu out of power because they cannot wait. They cannot wait for new elections. So the left is active everywhere. What is their MO and what's next on their agenda? We'll be talking about this with our guest coming up, Dr. Francisco Gil White. Don't go anywhere.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Racism in America. What's next on the agenda for the left? As I often say, as people often say, when America sneezes, the world catches a cold. And what we're seeing going on in America right now on their streets has been spreading to other countries around the world. In fact, in Israel, we have leftists that couldn't get Netanyahu out of office after three elections inside of a year. And now they're on the streets here in Israel trying to force him out because they couldn't get him out through the ballot box. And we're seeing this happening in the United States as well. They cannot wait even 4 years. They cannot respect democracy. So where is the left on the table? What is next on their agenda? So our guest today is Dr. Francisco Gil White. He is a political anthropologist and professor at Etam University in Mexico City. He's also known for his extensive research, which examines what's driving world politics, movements, and agendas. You can check out his website at hearhome.com. That's H-I-R for historical and investigative research. Hearhome.com. Welcome to the show, Dr. Francisco Gil White.
Hi, Tamar. It's always a pleasure to be on the show with you. Thank you for having me.
Always good. And for people who know about our interviews, we often spar on the air. So get ready, get your boxing gloves on, and here we go. So I understand that you're about to publish a piece on the racism on the left. So explain that, please.
Well, so the title of the piece, which will probably be up either tomorrow or the day after, is the United States becoming a racist country? Or rather, forgive me, that's not the exact title. The exact title is, will the left make the United States racist?
Okay.
And so what I'm exploring here is, well, as you know, I've been a student of racism for many, many years. That's the reason I became an anthropologist. And well, over the years, I've been studying the more traditional subjects in the study of racism, right? So I've been doing a lot of work on anti-Semitism, and I've also done some work on anti-Black racism. For example, I've studied the eugenicist, that is to say, proto-Nazi origins of IQ testing. I've also studied the racism of the slave-owning founding fathers of the United States. I say this because I am about to take a very anti-woke position on what's going on right now in political developments in the United States. And people think that if you're against what the woke people are doing, then you must be a racist. But in fact, I have a track record of opposing anti-Black racism. What happens is that I also do not like anti-white racism. I don't like racism at all, no matter who the target is. I think racism is wrong. And I think that the left is making the mistake of becoming racist. And this is a hard thing to spot, you know? It's not the easiest thing for people to see, particularly if you yourself are on the left. It can be very hard for you to notice that your movement is becoming racist, because on the left, anti-racism is a matter of tactical method, right? So the left always publicly presents itself as an opponent of racism. And that tactical move, which is such a big part of the identity of people on the left, is precisely what makes it hard for them to notice when they themselves are, you know, becoming racist. And I think that's exactly what has been happening to the left in the United States, because the main discourse on the left is identity politics. And what identity politics tells people to think is that your value is a consequence of your membership in a group. And so the discourse that the left has been setting up, and I'd like to talk about the history with you in a second, because the history is very important to understand it. But the discourse that they've been setting up is one where if you're white, you're bad. And if you're a person of color, you're good. That's just nonsense.
Okay, so, you know, I think that all rational people understand that and are resisting, you know, just because you were born something, you have white privilege, or just because you were born something, you are automatically, if you were born Black, you're automatically a victim, okay? We've seen that people from Africa are dying to get into the United States because it is the best country in the world, and with the most opportunity. And if anyone wants to call the United States racist, they just voted in twice a black president. You know, a racist country wouldn't do something like that.
I'm sorry to disagree with you.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't think that those pieces of evidence rule out the idea that there's racism in the United States. I think there's racism in the United States against blacks.
But that doesn't mean that the country is racist. There's racism everywhere. Everybody has a right to their own opinion. Some people don't like other races. That's what it is. But as a country, America is not a racist country.
Well, I think that's debatable, but that's not really the point. See, the point I'm trying to make is not that anti-black racism does not exist, or that there is no systemic discrimination against blacks in the United States. I'm not disputing that. What I'm saying is that the left has become racist against whites. That's my point. So whether or not there is anti-black racism in the United States, you may think there isn't much of it. I may think there is more of it. That's not the point. The point I'm making is that regardless of how much anti-black racism there is in the United States, anti-white racism is just as bad. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, and so
that's what the left is doing.
Okay, and so then explain to everybody why the left is agitating this and trying to stir up more racism and hatred between people based on their race.
Well, so this is as a historical process. This is a consequence of identity politics. And identity politics was born in the 1960s. Okay, so in the 1960s, you had political entrepreneurs in the social sciences and humanities, the universities, who teach the courses where university students will confront moral issues, right? This is the social sciences and the humanities. So you had these political entrepreneurs teaching these courses in the university, and they mutated Marxism into something new. And out came postmodernist, new left identity politics. As I said, this is back in the late 1960s. Now, for reasons that are still obscure, university administrators, who in fact answered to big-time capitalist trustees, made these new left Marxists very powerful in academia. And with that power, they quickly dominated the social sciences and humanities with these ubiquitous grievance studies that are grounded in what Lukianoff and Haidt have called vindictive protectiveness. It's kind of a revenge kind of mode. So here, power paradoxically flows from your status as victim. So vindictive protectiveness is aggressive victimhood. Okay, the more you can claim that you are a victim of oppression, the more powerful you become in this discourse, paradoxically, because the bigger tantrum you can make for reparations to be made for you and for the system to accommodate your grievance. Now, what's very interesting about this process is that the only reason it could get started, the only reason it could begin at all, was that there was already a broad consensus among whites to favor symbolic reparations. There was a widespread recognition among whites of social debts owed. In other words, whites were already quite desperate half a century ago to signal their tolerance, to make it clear to the rest of society that they were no longer racist. That's the only reason that identity politics could work, because identity politics was built on this white guilt. Okay, that's the entire grammar of identity politics depends on white guilt. So this is the irony, that the whole machinery of identity politics is always harassing whites for being allegedly racist. And you've got this giant population of whites who are not racist at all, who are falling over themselves to signal that they're not racist. And whatever the identity politics people and the woke people are trying to force them to say and do and change, they'll do it. They do it immediately. They try to do it as hard as they can because they want to signal that they're not racist. And it's never enough because the rules keep changing.
So how do they how do they use this in order to gain power, the left?
Well, if you have a population of whites who are desperate to signal that they're not racist, then you can start getting concessions from them by saying you owe us, right? So people of color like myself, I'm Mexican, as you know, will act towards white people if they're in this identity politics.
Okay, you know what? Hold that thought. We have to go to a break. I'm sorry. The music's on. Sure. We'll be right back, everybody. Don't go anywhere.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Modesty at the beach? It isn't just about body image. It's about feeling good. Modest swimsuits so we don't get burned by the sun.
So we won't get ogled by strangers.
So we'll feel free to express ourselves without the need to expose ourselves.
Let Marcy Modest help you to cover up what you want, how you want.
Made in Israel.
Visit MarcyModest.com. That's M-A-R-S-E-A Modest.com.
And get a 10% discount on your first purchase.
Two new shows on Israel News Talk Radio.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel?
Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Our guest is Dr. Francisco Gil White, and he is here talking about racism in America and how the left is using that to gain power, to divide and conquer, I guess, as they say. And you were telling us in the last segment, Dr. Francisco Gil White, that how the left hitchhikes, basically, on people who they put, you know, victim status on. So explain that.
So what they did is, when this whole thing got started, the first thing they did is they weaponized the term people of color. So that people of color would exclude whites from everybody else. So they changed the definition of people of color to exclude whites and create this super category that would group everybody else. And then they had what I call the grievance vanguard. In other words, self-appointed defenders of people of color and other presumed victims. They had this grievance vanguard, keep white Americans guessing, from where and for what offense the next accusation of racism would come. Okay, so it starts with speech reforms, of course, you know this, called political correctness, right, as a supposed balm and protection to victims. But the rules of political correctness keep changing, and rather quickly. And they change so fast that people trying to keep up with it are going to trip. They're going to trip. You're going to say the wrong thing because the right and the wrong thing change from week to week. And this, of course, makes whites nervous, right? Whites are trying to be good. They're trying to be politically correct. But you change the rules on them all the time, and of course, they're going to trip up. This makes them paranoid. So they get used to proffering apologies, making recantations. And soon they learn that the safest place is to join the grievance vanguard. In other words, to become identified publicly as someone who is very offended by racists, and you're leading the charge against racists, and then you become a good white, right? Now, being good is a lot of work. Each turn of the cycle, to stay ahead of trouble, good whites have to compete to display umbrage at behaviors that before, you know, the less morally advanced, the not sufficiently woke, had yet to identify as racist. And at first, this is how you shine, but then it's how you survive. You know, pretty soon, it becomes a dog-eat-dog world, kind of an evolutionary arms race. And here, since the victims have the advantage, right, in this discourse, in this grammar, it's better to be a victim because then you can be complaining that somebody else is the racist, and that person then has to apologize to you, right, to give you something, right? So since the victims have the advantage, new categories of victim begin to proliferate. You know, all kinds of people start inventing that they're oppressed in different ways. Why? Because this is the way to get power in this system, right? This is why so many new gender categories suddenly exploded all over the place, because each one of these new gender categories gets to say that they're a specially oppressed minority, that they're not being taken into account, that people don't accept them, that they don't recognize their reality and so forth. So then this becomes a new category of victim. And so the alphabet is now being strained by the number of initials that we have to use for all these new gender categories that people have invented, right? So demands for symbolic reparations multiply, intensify, combine, clash, and then you get intersectionality, right? The combination of different kinds of victim category status to make a better case that you're a big victim and so forth. This is, of course, making people very fragile. It's a terrible psychology to grow up with. It's been happening for half a century. So the new generations have grown up in this culture that teaches them that the way to get something is to claim to be a victim. And then you have to really believe that you're a victim. But that, of course, makes you very brittle. So as the grievance vanguard becomes intoxicated with power, it begins to find something to police in every twitch. So now they talk about these microaggressions, right? There's something to complain about in every little twitch. Even the things you don't say become microaggressions. It's insane. And it looks like fragility, except that now you've got these campus riots that erupt to abolish any expression not pre-approved by rapidly evolving grievance dogma. So you get this paradoxical fragility that erupts into campus riots, really violent campus riots, right? And this is what they call cancel culture. So anybody who says anything that contradicts the grievance vanguard dogma is identified as someone that they need to shut down. This person must not be allowed to speak. And this is doing tremendous damage to freedom of speech in the United States, especially on campus, but also in the media spaces and in social media, right? So any dissenter from this identity politics dogma is quickly mobbed online because social media has reduced the cost of mobbing someone to zero. And so people who want to mob somebody else and absolutely destroy them, right, can take advantage of this impunity that social media provides. And college administrators, either cooperative or cowed, you know, are now, you know, left and right publishing apologies and guidelines creating quote-unquote safe spaces to coddle these vocational victims who hyperventilate at mere ideas, and they censor and fire professors in hopes of broadcasting a virtue signal that will be strong enough to ward off the mob outrage, right? And then woke organizations and companies follow suit, because as people graduate from the universities, this has been spilling out of academia into the real world. But none of that buys peace, because racism, presumed everywhere, will be everywhere found. And so the grievance vanguard, by their own one-upmanship, start turning on each other. They start eating their own. They all become afraid to speak their minds. We all become afraid to speak our minds. So the funniest thing that's happening right now, for example, you saw it in the George Floyd protest, is that there's no way to do it right, right? So you'd think that with unprecedented numbers of white people protesting the killing of George Floyd, the system could say, well, now they're off the hook now. I mean, they're all out in the street protesting racism. They're off the hook. That's naive, because identity politics, by its own cynical grammar, cannot allow contrite whites their redemption. In the George Floyd context, everybody and his second cousin began posting black squares on Instagram to support Black Lives Matter. And Bill Maher tried to make fun of this. He reported, I'm quoting him now. He says, people got called out for not posting the square, and then for just posting the square without speaking out, and then for posting it and speaking out but not voicing their support in the exact way that was said in the New Dakota Ring and so forth, unquote. So this is the level of insanity we're in right now. There's no way to do it right, because everybody is consumed by the effort to pose as the guy who is crucifying some racist, right? So you need to find something to object in whatever anybody else is doing, so that you can send this signal that you're the good anti-racist policeman. So Maher was trying to make fun of this, but the whole thing whizzed past him beyond the point of reasonable absurdity, the kind you can still ridicule, because these were whites shaming other whites for not being sufficiently anti-racist, for not doing the anti-racism in the exact same way, even though they were all protesting, right? It's insanity. It's cannibals eating each other in the struggle to be the one true anti-racist, the last Maoist standing, right? This is like communist denunciations inside the Soviet Union or in Cambodia or inside the Nazi Third Reich. Right. Everybody becomes afraid that they're not dogmatic enough. And everybody else is trying to show that they are dogmatic enough by denouncing someone.
Where is this all going to lead us to?
It's going to destroy freedom of speech. But it's also going to turn the U.S. into a racist country, because one of the consequences of this is that a lot of whites are getting fed up. And that is pushing them into traditional racism. So what you're going to get in the United States is a division. You're going to get the leftist, anti-white racists, and then you're going to get a lot of new traditional anti-black racists and anti-other things racists among whites, because the reaction to this insanity on the left is going to push them towards the traditional identity politics of the right. And this is what the U.S. is going to become. Some people are predicting a civil war. I don't think that's unreasonable.
I understand from, learning about let's get him and him to fight, because we want to win, right? I mean, the British did that. They would go into other countries and then they would, encourage the two opposite parties there, or ideologies or religions or whatever it is, to fight with each other so the British weren't touched. But in any case, I mean, where is this going to lead America to? Because America is like one of the best countries in the world, and to see it eating itself up, as you say, like this is a tragedy.
Well, I mean, it's going to depend on what this generation does. You know, as the Hopi say, there's a beautiful Hopi saying that goes like this. We are the ones we were waiting for.
All right, hold it right there. We have to go we have to go to another break. We're going to be right back, everybody. Feel free to call in if you have any comments or questions. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the Phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel?
Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we're talking about racism in America and what's next on the agenda for the left. I mean, the left we've seen has been working very hard. When we saw it when Obama got elected as the president of the United States, he said he was going to fundamentally change America. I think it had started then. You had a country that was working that was a very liberal and loving country, inclusive, wanting to get rid of racism. And I see, that's just my opinion, a president that came in and put the fire, set fire under the feet of racism and had it divide America and bring us back. And that's what I'm seeing happening today. And our guest is so succinctly explaining how the left is doing this in order to get power. So in this last segment, Dr. Francisco Gil White, how can you, where would you like to take us in how the left is using racism and dividing people and causing hatred and making people afraid to speak, taking away our rights, if not by law, by peer pressure? Go ahead.
Yeah, so the left has now, the grammar of identity politics has now arrived at its logical extreme, right? So if you set up a process where whites can never get redemption because every time they try to be politically correct and say the things that they're supposed to say and make the apologies that they need to make and so forth, the rules change so that they have to go one step further and so forth, right? And you keep churning this grammatical machine in the same direction inexorably, you will arrive at a point where you are telling whites that they're racist, not because of anything that they do, but because they are white. And this has already happened. So the signal moment in the historical development of this process in recent years was when Professor Brett Weinstein, a brilliant evolutionary theorist who was at Evergreen College, he protested something that the grievance vanguard did at Evergreen College. What they did was they had this thing called Day of Absence, which was a voluntary thing for people of color that they would stay away from school on the day of absence. It was one day a year, sort of to make everybody conscious of how important people of color are, minorities are, and so forth. And that's fine. That was a voluntary thing. But then on this particular year, this is a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I think, they decided that the day of absence would be a day without white people. So they told whites not to come to school on that day. So instead of becoming a voluntary thing where, you know, you stay away if you want to, now it was an obligatory thing where if you're white, you're excluded. And so Professor Weinstein protested against this. He said, hey, look, this is discrimination. This is racist discrimination. You can't do this. And there was an entire revolution at Evergreen College because the grievance vanguard got violent. And they accused Weinstein of being a Nazi because he was protesting racism, right? Well, Weinstein happens to be Jewish. And they were accusing him of being a Nazi because he was upset that they were creating an event to exclude whites, right? So they had this celebration, quote unquote, of diversity where whites are not welcome. So war is peace, freedom of is slavery, and the bigots are anti-racist, right? You're now in full Orwellian mode. Well, if whites cannot redeem their skin, what comes next? Right. It's either white self-hatred, as happened, for example, you saw it in some of the George Floyd protests, right? So in Charleston, for example, you had these whites parading themselves as if they were slaves in chains of these black men who were leading them,
right?
And they had, painted scars on their back as if they had been whipped, right? So this grotesque, Grand Guignol display is the extreme of whites trying to apologize for the history of slavery. Well, they didn't do anything. They've never held slaves. This is completely ridiculous. This is visiting the crimes of the great-grandfathers on the great-grandchildren.
Okay, I'm going to stop you here just for a moment because we have a caller who's been waiting for actually a very long time. We have joining us Bill from the Occupied Territories of Chicago. Hi there, Bill. What's your comment or question?
That's right. I'm from the Occupied Territories by Lake Michigan, correct?
Yes, okay. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay, well, my question is, look, I agree that Professor White has indeed described what happened, in other words, how the last few generations of young people have been indoctrinated in the universities. But the question is how to stop it, because obviously it sounds right now we're in a place where it's snowballing out of control, and you have to be able to find a way to stop this crazy indoctrination that's essentially brainwashing these people. In other words, I'm saying they need to be deprogrammed because this is crazy already. I agree, it's insane.
Okay, so that's a good question. So, Professor Francisco Gil White, how do we fight against this? You know, people who don't believe in racism and also don't want to be victimized and called a racist. How do we stop it?
Well, I think that the way to stop it, and I'm sorry that I can't give your caller a more complete answer because this is a tough one to fix. So, How do you get kids out of cults, Because this is what it is. It's a cult. It's a religion. This is a religion. It has all of the telltale signs of a religion, right? So it has a dogma. If people contradict the dogma, people get violent. There is no reasoning at work. There's all this concerned that people might think you're a heretic, so you're especially hard on people that you think are heretics, so that others will see that you are persecuting them, and therefore that you are, one of the faithful, and so forth. So it's got all of these features that are characteristic of a religion, of a cult.
We only have 3 minutes left to the show, so just want you to know that. Go ahead.
So I think not exactly sure how to do this, but the way to do this is to expose to these leftist kids that they have become racist, because that will fill them with shame. If they can be made to understand that they've become racist, since they're supposed to be anti-racist, right? If we can communicate to them that the thing has flipped, that now they're the racists, that will may produce shame necessary to have a moment of enlightenment. And what we need to do is we need the adults. We need people of my generation, the Generation Xers. You know, I'm 51. People in my generation need to speak to the younger generations who don't understand what happened to their heads because they already grew up in this environment. But we didn't, or at least it was the, let us say that the revolution wasn't complete when we were growing up. It was happening. We saw it happening, but it wasn't complete. So we can see how it happened and we can explain the historical process to them. Explaining the historical process is key. Because when you can see where the ideas came from, it gives you a measure of autonomy and independence from those ideas. You can start looking at them as something that came into your head rather than something that is true of the universe. So I think that explaining the history as I did with you today is very important. The kids need to hear that explanation. So I'm going to be publishing that explanation in the next couple of days, and I hope that people use it. And I hope that the adults speak to the kids because... the kids need to do some hard thinking.
Yeah, I don't know if the kids are going to accept the message. I think that usually things like this only repair themselves when they have experienced that, uh-oh, we made a mistake, when they themselves become the victims of their own foolishness. You know, they're called useful idiots. And then it's too late. And then it's too late.
But that's already happening, Tamar, because so maybe this is the opportunity, because they're already becoming cannibals. Right? Because that's how this process works. That's how this process happened inside the communist parties. Mm-hmm. It's the way it happened inside the Nazi party, right? Eventually, everybody was accusing everybody else of not being a big
So you're saying that the only way to stop it is just to try to explain to people? Isn't there another way? I mean, the left doesn't do it through trying to explain to people and to bring them up and to educate them. The left does it by intimidation, by blacklisting you, by all sorts of nasty things. Does the right...
This is true, but I think we have an opportunity because today we have the internet and there's a gigantic media space that has opened up for people to challenge this, and they're doing it in podcasts all over the place and articles, and these podcasts are logging millions of views. So if you go to Joe Rogan's podcast or Eric Weinstein, Brett Weinstein, Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson, and so forth, all of these people are creating a conversation that couldn't have existed without the new internet tools that we have. And they're presenting a very, very strong challenge to the mainstream media, to mainstream academic culture. All of these conversations are available for anybody who wants to listen. And they're getting shared right. Like crazy.
That's the key. Those who want to listen. Some people, it's like if it comes from Fox News or if it comes from a certain messenger, they already reject it. They won't even listen to you. But we have to hold it right there. We have to stop here. I want to thank you. This is so stimulating. I wish that I had more airtime to be able to delve into this.
Can I say one last thing?
You have 10 seconds.
Okay. I'd like to have another show where I explain how identity politics was invented around the Arab-Israeli conflict. It's a very important topic.
All right, we can do it next week if you want. That's fine. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Francisco Gil White. And thank you, everybody. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to write me tomorrow at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Thanks for being with us.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.